Okay, so this is, I believe, class 7 of our basic Buddhist teaching series. If you are at all curious, we do record the classes, video or audio, and they're posted to the website within a few days, and so you can go back and listen to previous classes if you want to. This evening, we are studying. So basically, these are like original teachings. These are the Buddha's teachings. And they're certainly not all of them, but they are some of the ones that I've found the most useful and are kind of foundational to Zen. So you might not hear us talk about these teachings a lot in these words per se, but they are very interesting tools if you want to use them in addition to the kind of typical Zen tools. And generally speaking, if you look closely at Zen practice, you're going to see all of these things, just maybe with slightly different labels, slightly different ways we go about them. So this class is on the 5 hindrances. So the Indians, the ancient Indians, I don't know about the modern Indians, but the ancient Indians loved lists. So in Buddhism, we have 8 this and 4 that, and the 5 thises and whatever. So this is the 5 hindrances. And these are obstacles that arise. Usually, it's most obvious in our meditation, but it certainly is also the case if we're trying to follow the precepts in everyday life, we're trying to manifest compassion, we're trying to be mindful and turning toward the truth. So the whole idea is we become freer of these kinds of hindrances or issues by examining them, by turning our attention to them and studying them very in great detail. So thus, breaking hindrances into 5 different hindrances, being able to recognize 5 different what hindrance is arising right now, and how does that all work? So the 5 hindrances, which I'm going to talk a little bit more about each one, are it's usually just described as sensual desire, but I also like worldly obsession. Talk a little bit more about that. Ill will, sloth and torpor. So this is sloth hyphen and hyphen torpor. Sloth and torpor. So I'll explain. The original term, the original Pali or Sanskrit term, is hyphenated. So it's sloth and torpor. Restlessness and worry, another hyphenated thing. And then doubts, skeptical doubt or fearful doubt. So these are, we have to remember what hindrance to what. These are hindrances to spiritual growth and development. They are hindrances to clear states of mind. They are hindrances to following the Eightfold Path, hindrances to the relief of suffering, to the cultivation of wisdom, to the manifestation of compassion. So just to go through each one in some fairly briefly. I was looking through the last time I did classes on the hindrances was about 3, 4 years ago, and I did a whole class on each hindrance. So you can talk about these things at great length. So the first one is kamachanda, worldly obsession or sensual desire. So sensual, when we say sensual desire, we tend to think of like, food and sex and kind of, sense pleasures. But it's important to remember that in Buddhism, we view the mind as a sense organ, that it senses thoughts. I mean, that's at least that's how the Buddha saw it. That's how original Buddhism saw it. That's how we find it helpful to look at it. It's not like we're stating something scientific there, but just the mind is one of the senses. Therefore, we're kind of talking about when we're talking about sensual desire, we're talking about desire and attraction for almost any kind of experience or object or relationship or anything that you can think of. Anything that we can feel desire for falls in this category. With the exception of like spiritual desires, like desiring to manifest compassion, desiring to follow the precepts. Those are kind of, that's a, considered a different kind of desire. So what makes desire or attraction or enjoyment or appreciation into a hindrance? And I think that's part of what we are going to break into groups tonight and talk about. Each group will get a hindrance and we can explore some of this, like what makes it a hindrance. And I think we all know, if we look in our own experience, we know where just, you know, enjoying something or looking forward to something or, you know, thinking about maybe we'll acquire something starts to turn into a hindrance. When we have wholesome appreciation, we can enjoy physical, emotional, mental pleasures with a sense of gratitude without clinging to them, without expecting them to bring us permanent happiness, without immediately thinking of getting more. When we have the hindrance of sense desire, we focus on obtaining or fulfilling a particular pleasure, particular desire. We may become oblivious to everything else, usually while somehow overestimating how wonderful the fulfillment of this desire is going to be. So I would love this little passage. This is from a talk given by Ajahn Brahmavamsa. He's a Theravadan monk. This is a talk on the five hindrances. He says, in the Pali term, kama chanda, so that's this hindrance, chanda is what you have to do if you cannot attend a meeting of the community of monks and you want to give approval and agreement to what is happening there. You give your chanda to go ahead in your absence. It's agreement, approval, consent. So this is more subtle than mere desire. This means you are buying into, you're giving into this. You want it, you approve of it, and you allow it to happen. In the same way that we have chanda in the Vinaya monastic regulations, we have kama chanda. It's as if you give your approval for the sensory world to be in your consciousness, in your mind. You accept it, approve of it, you play with it. That's all chanda. It's letting it completely occupy the mind. And it's much more subtle than just mere desire. So I know for myself, this gets tied up for me with various projects and things like achieving the project. And, you know, at a certain point, it's just something, you know, nice that I want to do, something that's going to bring about some benefit. But then it's like, the mind just, that's, it just becomes occupied with it, right? And I'll sit at my computer for hours and hours and hours and not eat lunch or move or exercise, or, you know, it's like we start doing weird stuff. Like we spend too much money. We you know, scroll Amazon for hours reading reviews about, you know, this thing we're going to buy, or I don't know, you know, it's like, now we're giving our agreement, right? So it's kind of neat. Each of these hindrances, there's a pair of metaphors that describe each one. So they say, if you have water and you are wanting to see through the water, you're wanting to see a reflection in the water. Water made opaque with dyes or other substances is like kama chanda, the sensual desire. It's like, it's just been filled with this color and now it's dense and you can't really see through it. Or to use this other set of metaphors, it's like enjoying things while incurring debt. Debt you'll later have to pay with interest and often with some form of suffering. So the second one I won't even go on about so much because I think we're all pretty familiar with it, is vyapada, or ill will. It can also be translated as malice. And according to the Princeton Dictionary of Buddhism, it refers to the hateful wish that harm befall another. So ill will, I mean, obviously it arises initially with a little bit of irritation, a little bit of, you know, aversion. But similarly to the kama chanda, right, we kind of give into it. We start indulging in it. We start rehearsing it, nourishing it. So it really becomes a hindrance when we say yes to it. So in terms of our metaphor, it's this is as if our water is boiling, or it's just as a sick person cannot enjoy physical ease and good health, an angry person can't enjoy spiritual ease and good health. So it's like being ill. So you're incurring debt, enjoying yourself while incurring debt is the sensual pleasure, and like being sick is the ill will. Then we have, I don't know exactly how to pronounce this, tina midha, sloth and torpor. So sloth being an unwillingness to strive. It's kind of a laziness, if you will. And then the torpor is the resultant sluggishness of mind and body that comes from that. And then, as we all know, kind of can lead to more sloth and that kind of thing. So we often think of this kind of thing, right? Our energy level as being primarily a physical thing. You know, did we get enough sleep, or, you know, are we feeling ill or whatever? But then you think about what if we were in an emergency, right? We only have a few hours, we got to get something done. We got a few hours or we're all going to die. Like, we'd all suddenly have a lot of energy. Like, so there's a huge aspect of this, which is mental, psychological. So this is a compound word in Pali, tina midha. So tina, sloth, is sluggishness or dullness of mind. Its characteristic is lack of driving power. Its function is to dispel energy. It is manifested as the sinking of the mind. Its proximate cause is unwise attention to boredom, drowsiness, etc. And then torpor, midha, is the morbid state of the mental factors. Its characteristic is unwieldiness. Its function is to smother. It is manifested as drooping or as nodding and sleepiness. And they always occur in conjunction and are opposed to energy, virya, which is one of the six perfections. And so this is as if your water is covered with LJ and slime. Or if, in terms of like the whole body, it's like you're stuck in a cramped, dark prison. So the next one is Uddacha Kukucha, restlessness and worry. So restlessness or agitation has the characteristic of disquietude, like water whipped up by the wind. Its function is to make the mind unsteady as the wind makes a banner ripple. It's manifested as turmoil. And then worry or remorse after having done wrong. Its characteristic is subsequent regret. Its function is to sorrow over what has and what has not been done. It is manifested as remorse. Its proximate cause is what has and what has not been done. So Brahmavamsa suggests this hindrance is caused by the fault-finding state of mind, which cannot be satisfied with things as they are, and so has to move on to the promise of something better, forever just beyond. In some ways, restlessness and worry is the manifestation of dukkha in our mind. So of course at the spectrum, we have just almost like our default mode, random processing on the one end. But then of course we can get very, you know, caught up in restlessness and worry at the other end. So this is like water ruffled by the wind, or like a servant constantly at the beck and call of someone else. And then finally, we have uncertainty or skeptical doubt. So doubt here, so this is not questioning in a, like, we want to question in practice. We want to wonder, who am I? What is this? Is this a legitimate path? Is this true? So we want that kind of doubt. But this is a kind of spiritual doubt. From a Buddhist perspective, the inability to place confidence in the Buddha, the Dharma, and Sangha, and the training. Its characteristic is doubting. Its function is to waver. It is manifested as indecisiveness and as taking sides. So when you think about it, when does doubt become a hindrance? You know, it's always think of this as, you know, at what point does this manifesting thing, which isn't a big deal, become a hindrance? When we become preoccupied, unable to commit, constantly second guessing ourselves and the path that we are on. Maybe another path would be better. Maybe I'm not up to this. Also, when this kind of doubt becomes repetitive, intrusive, unquenchable. And also when we're not truly open-minded. It's not a what is this, what can happen. It's, you know, I think this is a bad thing. I think I can't do this. There's actually kind of a negative assumption in there. So the biggest problem with the hindrances is that they are rather intoxicating and self-perpetuating. So the description is, when we're in the grip of a hindrance, we can't see its drawbacks. So I guess you can see being in the midst of sensual desire, right? When I'm in the midst of like, I'm going to make this thing happen. I got to have this thing happen. And like, I can't look up and be just like, this is, you know, you're really pushing this to me, you know. I can't see how it's a waste of time or things are getting out of balance, right? It just is like, pulls me forward. And similarly, ill will, the more that we indulge it, the more that it tells us, this is the most important thing. You should not forget this. This is, you better keep this in mind. So similarly, so because of this, in order to gain some freedom from a hindrance, to break free of it, so we need to break free of it at least a little bit before we can start to see clearly. And there's a process for this, which I will go into and then we'll talk about it. But I think I'll just leave it there because I want to have enough time to break into our little groups and do this little exercise. So I understand you may not be entirely clear on the, but I do have little handouts and a link for those of you on Zoom. So there'll be a little cheat sheet. So the process of practicing to abandon the hindrances. So there's several steps, and in the little cheat sheet, I have these steps listed out. And then the idea is that in our groups, each group gets a hindrance, and then you kind of imagine like what would each of these steps look like when you're working with said hindrance. So the first is mindfulness, basically becoming aware that this hindrance has arisen. And this is why kind of studying this and you're just parsing it out in our minds might help us notice, oh yeah, like it's sloth and torpor today. It's restlessness and worry this afternoon. Because as soon as we recognize it and kind of give it a name, we're not entirely caught up in it. we're recognizing this is something that's arising in our experience. It doesn't define us. It's not inherently true. It's just something that's happening. So my question for each group will be, what might you notice that tells you that your, you know, normal natural experience is turning into a hindrance? How does the hindrance manifest in body, speech, and mind? And the second step is to examine, what are the nutriments? What feeds the hindrance or makes it worse? And much of the time, when we're caught up in it, we're just drawn to that nutriment, right? We're just going to keep on scrolling. We're going to keep on doing that thing, which just makes it worse. So what feeds it? What makes it worse? And then contemplating the negative effects. So what are the negative effects of this hindrance? To try to really honestly stop and pause and notice what the negative effects of it are. The fourth is noble friendship and suitable conversation. So this is like, you know, in the, one of the first steps in like, okay, is to really recognize this and then turn towards someone who we trust and who will be non-judgmental. And so really in my exercise, I was going to say, you know, imagine what would this good friend say to you if you went and you told them honestly what was going on, you know, what, you know, non-judgmentally and kindly and gently might they say to you? And then the fifth is supportive conditions. What conditions might we set up that would be supportive to our becoming free of the hindrance? And then the sixth is antidote or redirection. What practice might we do? What might we contemplate or tell ourselves to counteract the hindrance? So I'm just going to have two groups in the Zendo covering, I think we said, see, I told Tyler what I was going to do.
Yeah, so we have dirt will be ill will and restlessness and worry. Okay. And we're the other three.
All right. So when you accept an invitation to a breakout room, it's going to have the name of your of your hindrance. And I am going to send the link to my little cheat sheet here. And I didn't, in the Dirt Zendo, I didn't make enough for everybody, but I figured if everybody, you know, distributed it out, everybody will be able to see it when they need to. If anybody online, if your conversations were at all like what's happening here, you didn't get through all the questions and the breakout rooms ended right in the middle of your conversation. But that's cool. Like, I wanted to leave enough time that we could report back a little bit. We could hit a little report on each hindrance. And you don't need to go through all six of the questions because I'm sure we didn't get through them. All right. So let's start with, let's just go down the list and start with sensual desire. Did the sensual worldly obsession group choose a secretary? Drew?
It's self-selected, yes. So yeah, we did not get through the list, but we got through half of it. We got through three questions, not too bad. So for the mindfulness bit, big part of it was becoming aware that you're going to be dissatisfied with the result or likely to be dissatisfied. Become aware that you're developing tolerance to whatever activity, tolerance to a drug or whatever it is. Recurring thoughts, one group member reported feeling like a pulling in the chest. Nutriments, talked about indulging the desire, like actually like following through it on it with action, hanging out with others, doing the same thing, engaging in that negative behavior. Negative effects, if that's like addiction, could lead to things like illness, death. And the other big theme that popped up with negative effects was prioritization, prioritizing ineffectively, like doing something at the expense of other important activities. And that's as far as we got.
Cool. Thank you. Just one that popped into my head is like spending too much money on said thing. Skewing our priorities. All right. Then we're on to ill will. Yeah, that'd be great if you came up here so the cloud folks can see ya.
So I think we all agreed probably only got so far, like on maybe to the third or fourth. So mindfulness of ill will. We talked about the physical manifestations, which is similar to what he was just reporting, anxiety in chest, circular thinking, not being able to drop it, just thinking in circles, which I described kind of like, you know, if you're holding ill will towards a person, you can very quickly get on the hamster wheel of just rethinking this over and over and over and over again. The nutriments, remembering back to a certain instance with this person, holding past actions against them, superiority, and right versus wrong, how each person, well, of course, we also discussed is whether if you're holding ill will towards a person, would that, is it just inner or would that have outer manifestations? Let's see. The negative effects of ill will, possible mistreatment of person, mistrust and a communication breakdown. Mm-hmm. I said that if I'm holding ill will towards a person, even if it's something that I keep inside and don't share with anyone else, how might that manifest physically if I was in the room with the other person, the way that I hold myself towards a person, the way I approach the person. And then the last one that we got to was noble friendship and suitable conversation, mainly perspective.
Cool. Thank you. All right, on to sloth and torpor. Right. We all just want to go to bed.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right.
So noticing mindfulness of sloth and torpor. Basically, a lack of desire to do more. Feeling guilty, feeling low energy, no gumption, procrastination, avoiding what needs to be done. We started applying it to things like precepts. So, you know, being lazy on fixing speech, taking easy choices. We kind of liken that to sloth and torpor as well, maybe. Nutriments, thinking things are harder than they are, getting depressed about it, negative self-talk. Being in isolation is sort of a nutriment, whereas, you know, other people can kind of get you out of that habit. But in some cases, others can be a negative influence, so. Not having a routine, habits, feeling overwhelmed, multiple competing tasks, you know, where you can't get over and pick one to do, just kind of stuck, not having enough time. And another nutrient might even be, brain chemical rewards for whatever slothful behavior you have. As far as, negative effects, time wasted, guilt. We don't have a lot of negative effects because we started to run out of time there. And I would say that, you know, noble friendship, suitable conversation and supportive conditions are sort of, you know, you take some of the things that we put in for the mindful things and nutriments and you can sort of negate them, take the opposite because the supportive conditions can counter those. And then only thing we had on antidote and redirection is take a nap.
Take a nap.
Which kind of depends. Which it kind of depends, right? Sometimes you take that nap, you wake up refreshed. Sometimes why get up? All right. On to what is it? Restlessness and worry.
Okay. Our group had a lot of good ideas about this. When you notice that worry and restlessness is becoming a hindrance is if you find yourself being constantly pulled into the future and the past, and maybe you're neglecting things, maybe you're winding yourself up or being shut down, and your mind becomes obsessive. And then feeding it is when you're worried about something or you're restless and you kind of just keep like maybe go online and look something up or try to like read about it or ask somebody like, don't you think this is a problem, you know, and just like look for your confirmation bias and like just keep it churning in your head. And you might experience negative effects from while you're doing all that, you're neglecting what's going on in your life, the people in your life, the experiences that you could be having, but you're not present for, responsibilities that maybe you should be focusing on, and you just basically are missing the present moment. And then supportive conditions, the noble friendship and suitable conversation. We realized that the first thing to do if you are the friend is to first validate the person's experience. Mm-hmm. Because even if you see that they're going down a rabbit hole, it really doesn't help to just be opposed to them. So first validate, then help them get a fresh perspective on it, to step outside their own what they've already been like treading a path in the carpet about, like try to help them see just other ways to look at the situation, to see if they have any toxic beliefs and are telling themselves a story that's not completely true. And then we all thought that probably these kind of things are more likely to happen if you're not taking care of yourself, if you're not eating, sleeping, if you're not, you know, you should check to see if you're, you know, lacking in social time or community or doing things you enjoy, because that could make you more vulnerable to that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And the antidote or redirection, remind yourself to be kind to yourself, and don't forget to meditate.
Cool. You got through all of them. Wow. All right. Let's see. Now, uncertainty, skeptical doubt, fearful doubt. Who's our secretary for that?
Are these going to be printed up somewhere, the solutions?
The solution. Judith wants to know if we're gonna have a printed version of the solutions. You can watch the video again.
I do want to know if we're still recording.
Yeah, I think we started our recording again.
Oh,
really? So who's the spokesperson for the doubt? Uncertainty and doubt.
So I volunteered to read the questions out to our group, but I'm sincerely hoping that someone else can do an adequate job of summing up, because I my brain is so full of ideas right now that it's really hard to just shorten everything.
Okay.
Anybody from that group feel like giving us a little bit of a summary? You can do it. Maybe you all just aren't quite sure what you should say. So
yeah,
like I don't know.
Very skeptical
about very skeptical of the whole process.
We didn't make it through all the questions. Like toward the end, we're like, oh, like we're running out of time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in some ways, that is a very it's of the five. I think it's the most subtle.
It's challenging because it was very close to restlessness and worry in some ways.
Mm.
So some of the things we came up with seemed to answer that one more than the one we were working on.
Yeah, it is an interesting question about,
I guess, where restlessness and worry is more frantic energy, skeptical and fearful doubts like the paralyzed version, but more or less very, very similar.
Yeah, I think the doubt here, I think, is a lot of self-doubt, really fundamental self-doubt about whether you're up to the task, and in particular, whether you're up to the task of practice, whether you're up to the task of mindfulness or habit change or any other aspect of practice, which I think we all know that when we get on that cycle of self-criticism and doubt, that, I mean, you can go down that rabbit hole and never come out. You know, and some people are talking about confirmation bias and stuff like that, of just once you start to think of yourself that way, just everything confirms that. And then, but you could see where this, like, that might lead to other hindrances, right? Might lead to sloth and torpor, for instance. So, yeah, well, that brings us to 9 o'clock. I hope that was a nice little introduction to the five hindrances. There are, just Google it. There's plenty of stuff out there. It's one of the really core basic Buddhist teachings, and I think it's very helpful, especially when, you know, when the Buddha described mindfulness, particularly of these kinds of things. So part of that, we talked about the four foundations of mindfulness in an earlier class. And one of the things at certain stage in your process of practice, one of the things you become mindful of are the five hindrances. So the five hindrances is part of that. So becoming very clear about this, because I think a lot of times we identify with all of these experiences. We think of this as I am this way, as opposed to, and the Buddha is very specific, he describes, and when somebody's doing this properly, they say, ill will is arising in me. Ill will has arisen because I am doing this. Ill will is decreasing in me because I am doing this. So it's kind of like this objective, kind of scientific, in a way, observation of what's happening to us. And it helps us, I think, get detached from these experiences a little bit. All right. We offer the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you all for coming.